everyone. Welcome to America Trends. Glad to have you with us for the hour. Our audiences on the YouTube America TV network and on Biz Talk Radio, welcome, welcome. Ahead, we are talking about fascination of Americans with serial killers. This is the Ted Bundy tapes. This new docuseries has dropped on Netflix, and true crime addicts are, you know, delighted by it. But why are we so fascinated? Dr. John Huber of Mainstream Mental Health will talk a little bit about this coming up. Also, a trial lawyer examines the evidence for the New Testament. His name is Daniel Buttafuoco, author of Consider the Evidence. He is talking about the defense of the reliability of the New Testament and some other tidbits about the Bible that you will probably find very fascinating. Trending in the news, besides the weather we'll get to in a moment, in New York, more than 100 illegal aliens are now in the custody of ICE after a five-day raid. More than 107 of them were convicted criminals or had pending charges against them. And ICE is slamming the politicians who are making their jobs harder, saying that many sanctuary cities, including New York City, do not honor ICE detainers. So these lawbreakers, who often have significant criminal histories, are released onto the streets. 55 that those of those who were caught had either been issued a deportation order but weren't deported or had previously been removed and returned illegally. The statement from ICE said that several had prior convictions for offenses like child sex crimes, weapons charges, and assault. Starting this week, the U.S. is sending some asylum seekers back to Mexico while they await their hearings. The policy has now been introduced along the San Diego-San Ysidro port of entry. William Longines of Fox News explains.
This is how it is supposed to work and to do two things. Number one, end catch and release, where people arrive in the U.S. illegally and disappear for decades. Secondly, to deter future immigrants. So remember, only 60% of those crossing the Mexican border, they're not Mexican, they're Central Americans. 94,000 families last year, 99% are still here because, unlike Mexicans, the U.S. can't just send them back. An immigration judge must hear their claim. And even when deported, officials say 90% don't leave.
Once they step into the country, you know what happens, right? You know what they do. It's called, what do they call it, you know? They put one foot in our country, right? And we got them.
So here's how it works. Say the U.S. accepts 50 asylum seekers a day. After it shelters the most vulnerable, the unaccompanied children, the disabled, the LGBT population, the rest would be required to stay in Mexico while the U.S. considers their claim. Technically, this is a pilot. It begins today only in San Ysidro at the port of entry, where hundreds gather every day in Tijuana waiting to get called. So now they'll enter the port, state their claim, but instead of ICE taking them to a shelter or getting a bus ticket to stay in family here in the U.S., they will be sent back to Mexico, given a toll-free number to call to find out the status of their case, and if necessary, a bus will take them to federal court in San Diego.
So again, this new system is in San Diego only so far. If it grows too big, we expect there will be backlash from Mexico, and we also expect court challenges for the whole process. Also trending, the polar vortex is upon us. Boy, such harsh weather. A couple hundred million of us anyway, it's hitting. 75% of the U.S. population is enduring below freezing temps this week. How cold is it? The coldest spot so far for overnight was Buffalo, North Dakota, with a reading of minus 49. The coldest wind chill, Park Rapids, Minnesota, at minus 65. Flights canceled, post offices closed, dangerous to impossible travel conditions altogether, or even go outside conditions for many. But if you can possibly check on neighbors, elderly, etc., please do. The weather has already proven deadly for at least six people. There's a look at just what the polar vortex is. And yeah, that's how cold it is outside. Got to get clever there. Back after this.
I'm gonna say that I tried.
What's the sense in hurting my pride?
I really can't stay.
Baby, don't hold out. Oh, but it's cold outside.
Well, the Bible is an interesting book because it's literally transformed the world. It's the foundation for Western civilization. In fact, you can't really understand Western civilization if you don't have a working knowledge of the New Testament. And I mean that really sincerely. Whether you're a believer or not, the Bible's foundational to Western civilization. The Bible is written by 40 different authors over a period of 1,500 years. So it's very different than the Quran, which really rises or falls on Muhammad, right? You know, the Quran are the musings of Muhammad, and, you know, he wasn't even sure he was talking to God, and he talked to his wife, and she's like, oh, okay, go with it, you know? So the Bible's very different. The Bible's been vetted over many centuries. It's sort of a situation where, like, the cream floats to the top. There are other books, certainly. And people say, why isn't the Gospel of Thomas included in the New Testament? Well, let's start with the fact that it wasn't written by Thomas at all. It's a complete fraud. How about the Gospel of Judas? Same thing. These are second century Gnostic manuscripts. So when people say things like on the History Channel, well, you know, they chose to include these books and not the other. If you were a scholar and you really knew all this stuff, you wouldn't have chosen it either.
Well, this is also interesting. The veracity of the Bible, whether you can trust what it says or is it just a fairy tale like so many like to say. Very excited to introduce you to our first guest tonight, Daniel Buttafuoco. He is the author of Consider the Evidence, a book that does look at the reliability of the New Testament. And Daniel, welcome to America Trends.
Thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
We appreciate you. And I know we're going to chat about a few other things like, you know, this thing in New York with Andrew Cuomo and the law, the new New York abortion law that loosens the standards, to put it very, very mildly. But first of all, how did you get upon? So I was going to ask you, do you consider yourself a born again Christian, a Catholic, or what? And then why did you decide, I've got to write this book? This is so important.
Well, you asked me what I consider myself. I consider myself a follower of Jesus Christ, which I think is the true definition of a Christian. In fact, in the book I mention, in the book Consider the Evidence, I mention that being a Christian means to be a follower of Christ. In fact, the term Christian was originally a derogatory term, sort of a slur, and it meant little Christ. So I wear that badge proudly. I'm not so hung up on labels or about the denominations. I see a lot of good and I see a lot of problems in various different denominations, but it's true to note that all Christian denominations believe the same basic orthodox essentials of the faith, which is Jesus was born of a virgin, that he lived a sinless life, that he taught the highest morality possible, that he lived by it, and that he willingly died for our sins on a cross, and that he rose and resurrected on the third day and appeared to many witnesses, and that proved his ability to conquer death and his divinity. He was God in human form. Every Christian denomination believes that.
And, and Christ said, they say he didn't come to make a religion. He did come to make us followers.
We made a religion out of it, and that's the problem, meaning mankind. We packaged it, and we put a label on it, and in the process made a mess of it.
Right. We love to add these additional burdens that aren't necessary at all. And that's talked about in the New Testament, too. And I'm sure you touch on it in your book, Consider the Evidence. So when did this come about? And I love, because you approach this like an investigator would, an investigative journalist or a detective.
That's what I do. I'm a trial lawyer. I've been handling personal injury cases for 38 years, serious malpractice cases. We have a staff of 23 people. We have cases in 20 states. I wrote the test for the National Board of Trial Advocacy in 1990. And, I understand evidence. I've seen evidence in court, and I've analyzed enough evidence on cases. And the way this all happened, actually in a debate with a fellow lawyer who's a friend of mine, he's actually one of my adversaries on a case. And it turned out there was a party at his house. And, you know, lawyers like to mix it up, and we argue about things that we don't find it to be offensive. We love it. You know, we're in it for the sport of it, sort of like boxers that beat each other up and then, you know, they hug each other afterwards. And I was at this party about 25 years ago, and my friend said that he was an atheist. And we got into a very, very animated debate. The party split in two. Half of the people were cheering me on at the party, half were cheering him on. And when I left the party, I said to myself, you know, I know I'm a good lawyer. I win a lot of cases, and I understand evidence. I felt like I did a terrible job of representing the Christian point of view. And I was really disappointed in myself for not having a better understanding of the faith specifically. And this is really important. This is the crux of the book, why we believe these things. There are very good reasons why we believe the Christian faith is accurate. There are very good reasons why we believe the New Testament is the actual word of God. And there are very good reasons why we believe these things are historical. I just didn't know them. So 20-something years later, I've got a master's degree in theology. I studied with the finest apologist in the world, Rabbi Zacharias. And now I've written this book for people to understand it. It's very simple, very easy to read book.
Boy, we could all do as well, because it tells us to always have an answer for our faith. And you've so done that, and you were convicted that I need to investigate this and really be ready with that answer. So what did you start? If you say there were a few things that will tell you, this is it, this is why we're here. What were those first few things that you would want anyone to know? Some people don't even know what a Christian is, or a Jew is, or a Muslim is. They don't even have the basics in this day and age, as you well know, and it's just so sad.
Well, that's actually true. I wrote the book with that in mind, that people who have no idea of what the Judeo-Christian culture is all about, or the Judeo-Christian tradition, and primarily people coming out of Asia and China in particular, where they are actually converting to Christianity in crazy numbers, like something, depending on it, your estimate, something from 30,000 to 100,000 people per day are converting to Christianity, and they're doing it without a Judeo-Christian context. So they're accepting the claims of Christ, they're accepting the word of the preachers and the ministers, but they don't have a cultural context to place it in. They don't know what Jews are. They don't have any concept of legal guilt before a perfect God. They don't understand anything about a sacrifice or a sacrificial system. They don't understand about the history of the Jews and the prophecies that are pointing to a Messiah. They don't even know what a Messiah is. And the word Christ literally is Greek for Messiah. So I try to write this book with that in mind, to sort of let people understand how they could know what a Christian is and what the Christian faith is all about, and actually also what Judaism is, because you need Judaism to understand Christianity.
For sure. And I just, it just does prove that God can move among people who may not even have a Bible in their hands. And these revivals can happen, or these first time like revelations. So we're talking to Daniel Buttafuoco. His book is Consider the Evidence, and you may want to consider it. Take a look at this. You can go to considertheevidence.com. We're going to have him for another segment and talk about more of why, what were some of his biggest questions as he investigated the Bible. Back after this on America Trends.
Do not trespass on the land of another. This is foundational stuff to modern society. This is foundational to law, and I'm a lawyer. Leave food in the field for the poor. When you harvest, leave some food behind for the poor to glean. Do not steal. Do not commit fraud. Do not lie. Do not rob or oppress. Pay your workers on time. Don't be mean to people, like curse the deaf or trip the blind. This is all in the Bible. God is watching. Live with that in mind. Do no injustice in court. Justice is blind to both the rich and the poor. Don't slander, don't hate, reason with people, don't exact revenge, don't hold a grudge, and as I said, love your neighbor as yourself. These are principles that are found in the Bible. I don't think anybody could really argue with these things. The Bible gets a bad rap because, you know, it's certainly used by people to beat other people down. I have people that I know that will take the Bible and club you over the head with it, you know, and to the point where you don't want to even talk to them because it becomes a weapon in the hands of some people. But the Bible really has a bad rap.
We're going to talk about that more with Dan Buttafuoco. That's some video of him giving a 40 or so minute lecture on the Bible at Long Island University. You should look that up. It's really a good listen. And Daniel, author of Consider the Evidence, what are those Bibles behind you, some antique Bibles you had there with you that day?
Yes, I founded the Historical Bible Society. It all started with a collection I started about 25 years ago when I bought a King James 1611 original Bible. I sort of fell in love with it, and over the years I have acquired Bibles of various sizes and shapes and ages. Some of them are as old as 1,000 years old. We have a page from the Gutenberg Bible. So we have a traveling museum. I bring out those Bibles to various schools and churches. I just did it twice on Sunday in a church on Long Island. And it's a way to get people interested in the subject. And I explain sort of what the Bibles are about. And I launch into my topic as to why I believe the Bible's important.
You know what? I have a, gosh, this is so gorgeous. I have a few antique Bibles and some in different languages. And there's something about having that and holding it and looking at it and realizing this is something people have looked at for thousands of years. And we all have this thing in common, and it's so humbling and so beautiful. And why does the Bible elicit such strong feelings from both sides?
It's funny. It's the only book that I know of that is people swear on it and they swear at it. You know, it's a funny thing. I think that the Bible is it makes demands on us. You know, when God is talking to us, and if we believe it's the Word of God, the Bible claims to be the Word of God over 2,000 times. The Bible was quoted by William Shakespeare, the Geneva Bible, over 5,000 times. The Bible's foundational and integral to most, if not all, aspects of our life. And the Bible makes demands on us, and it's uncomfortable. You know, people would rather live without the idea of a God looking over their shoulder. I find I have problems with some of the things that God has said, and I find that it's not easy to keep the commandments and to try to be a good person. You know, you're being pulled. Everybody's experiences, if you've lived on this planet for any length of time, you've experienced, you know, like the old cartoons, the devil on one shoulder, the angel on the other shoulder, and you got to make a decision as to what to do. It's not always easy to do the right thing, especially when it seemingly goes against your interest. So, yeah, the Bible makes people uncomfortable. It's supposed to. Yeah. Would you want to be involved in any kind of religion or with any kind of God that didn't make any demands on us? What kind of a God would that be? That would be a puppet. God is not a puppet. You know, God is the sovereign creator of the universe who knows all and is the most important being in existence. And so, you know, we should have reverence for God and understand that he makes demands on us, and it's not always comfortable at times.
A just God, and that's a good thing. It must have done your heart good in recent weeks to see that six states are now considering putting Bible studies back into schools. And just today, President Trump was tweeting his support of that. What did you think when you heard about that?
Well, you know, if you go to other countries, and I travel quite a bit, I go to Switzerland often, I have friends there, they're not hung up about religion there. They teach it in the school. If you're a Christian, or you have a choice. They teach Islam, they teach Judaism, and they teach Christianity, and you could pick whichever one you want to take. If you're a Christian, you could pick all three, one or the other. They're not hung up about it. We have this crazy, I don't know, this obsession with separation of church and state. Listen, the Bible is an important document apart from religion, and that's a case I make repeatedly. You cannot consider yourself educated if you don't have a working understanding of the New Testament. You will not understand Western civilization. You wouldn't understand why we have phrases like fly in the ointment and my brother's keeper and white as snow and old as the hills, or why we're named people like Matthew and Mark and Luke and John and my name is Daniel and my middle name is Paul. You know, where does this stuff come from? Where do these cathedrals come from? All this artwork. If you don't know about the Bible, you have no idea about this stuff. So it's an important book, even on a secular level. And we shouldn't be afraid of it. We should analyze it, critique it, study it. It stands the test of time and it stands any critique.
And that's something we're going to have you on sometime just to talk about the prophecy of it all, because that's an amazing thing in and of itself. But talking about religion does connect to politics so much in America. And just in recent days, you've had Andrew Cuomo and the whole New York thing where they want to allow abortion up to the moment of delivering the baby. And some people are saying, how did we get here? And then you have Andrew Cuomo saying, I'm not here to legislate religion, but he's got Catholic bishops really pushing back at what he has done.
Yeah, he claims to be a good Catholic. It's very tragic. And not only are they passing these horrible laws, but they're celebrating them.
They and were listen, cheering I, in the gallery when they signed it. And that's something else that went viral, because people who were just appalled by it were saying, how are you cheering this? A child seconds before it's born can be killed.
It's sickening to me. I mean, I always say that if babies could vote, you wouldn't have these laws. But you know, they're the innocent victims in the ultimate sense of the word. They have no voice. You know, the only voice they have is through their mother. And I understand there's pressures on women. I'm not anti-women. I'm not misogynist. I love women. I've got three grown daughters who are women. And, you know, women, actually, I like women a lot better than men in a lot of ways. Women are more fun, more complicated, more interesting. But I will tell you this, that it is a tragedy when a woman's womb is not a safe place. And, you know, they keep talking about the woman has a right to do what she should with her own body. She has the right, but it's not her body. It's another body living inside of her. People are forgetting this. This is another person. And the fact that they're minutes away from being born and we could kill this infant is actually mind-boggling to me. I can't, frankly, I can't wrap my brain around such cruelty. I can't wrap my brain around such indifference to life. And the fact that people do these things and then they celebrate them like this is some kind of a laudable thing, to me, is it's unbelievable. I don't even know what to say. God must be really, really upset. I can only imagine, because he is for the innocent and God is for justice. And there's nothing more unjust than that, in my opinion. That kid has no say and no rights. It's horrible.
When you think of the scripture, righteousness exalts a nation, there is so much to weep for.
And sin is a reproach to any people. That's the rest of that verse. You're right. And sin is a reproach to any people. And I can't think of anything more sinful than killing your own child.
So much to lift in prayer for this country. Again, Daniel, I want to have you on again very soon and often, but about 30 seconds. Let's just say where we can find your book and what you want people to take away as we say goodbye to you.
Sure. Thank you so much. Well, first of all, I wrote this book so people would get to know God, to have an experience with God. And the way you do that is by reading the Bible. The Bible is an amazing book. It is the words of God. It catalogs real events in real history by eyewitnesses. And I make the case as to why we believe this to be so, why we know they're eyewitnesses, why we know these things were written very early, why these books form the New Testament, why they have the ring of truth in them. And what I like people to do is read it and consider the evidence. That's okay. How we start every trial, by saying, consider the evidence.
And that is the name, Consider the Evidence. Find the book, Daniel Buttafuoco. Thank you.
He didn't look like anybody's notion of somebody who would tear apart young girls.
My name is Ted Bundy.
I've never spoken to anybody about this. I am looking for an opportunity to tell the story as best I can.
A person of this type chooses a thing for a reason. Possession, control, violence.
There was something unique about Ted's brain. He talked in terms of a voice in his head, and this voice would start saying things about women.
He had very blue eyes. When he really got going, his eyes went absolutely black.
Murder leaving a person of this type hungry, unfulfilled, would also leave him with the obviously irrational belief that that the next time he did it, he would be fulfilled. And the next time he did it, he would be fulfilled. Or the next time he did it, he would be fulfilled.
All right, they are saying don't watch it alone. The Ted Bundy Tapes, a new four-part docuseries that arrived on Netflix just a few days back, just in time for the anniversary of the execution of Bundy, noted serial killer who escaped twice and just had some really interesting, boy, when you see it, I'm through about 3.5 episodes. We're with Dr. John Huber, and I'm wondering, Dr. Huber of Mainstream Mental Health, how many episodes you've gotten through, if you've gotten to it yet?
Well, I've seen it all.
You've seen it all.
Yeah, I've seen it all. And interesting, because I did my studies in South Florida for my forensic psychology, and I actually got to see a bunch of raw footage that never even made it into the show.
So really?
Yeah. So some actual video of him discussing some of the murders that he committed and associated rapes and like that. And yeah, it's pretty disturbing.
Well, there is such an obsession with true crime in America and beyond, and there are Reddit threads and message boards on and on with them, that and they do it day, and it's almost like gamers. They do it day and night, and so this was like Christmas for them when they found out this was coming out, because I think it's got some unreleased tapes, some of the things we heard, unreleased tapes of Bundy, and he invited them in, and it really just shows he really was some sort of narcissist sociopath, and he just wants to talk about all these little incidents and anecdotes from his childhood, and it's just, let's just say, it's just a little bit off the wall.
Absolutely. You know, he was the narcissistic killer. He very much wanted the world to know he was in charge. He was doing all this. He had control over it. And, you know, it wasn't until he started looking death right in the face within the last, you know, week or so that he started going, wait a minute, maybe I can trade some of this and you can lock me away. And I think behind that, he was hoping he could maintain this fame for, you know, as long as he was alive. And unfortunately, you know, for the victims and for many of the families, we still don't know where all his victims are, and we probably never will.
One thing I didn't realize, and I guess people, he was noted because he was supposedly so handsome, and one of those things where, you know, I don't know if it was before some of this, you know, now we have round-the-clock cable coverage and shows dedicated to this, and of course we have the internet. People always thought the bad guy would come, you know, looking very creepy, not like Ted Bundy. And he went after these women. And the thing he was convicted of, the thing he was executed for, the murder of the two Florida women, I didn't realize that happened upon his second escape from jail.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's the thing with these types of serial killers. They don't look evil. They don't have this sign on their chest that says, hey, watch out for me. And the really successful ones, they look like everybody. They look like your next door neighbor, your uncle, your brother, your sister, because there are female serial killers as well. And there's even teen serial killers that probably never would have killed had they not been with the other person that became their catalyst.
Doc, look at that picture. It looks like the picture of, like, say, an author on the back of a book jacket or something.
Absolutely, but that is him. You know, he practiced these shots. He had so many people taking pictures. He was always working on it. Definitely. He was a camera hound and a narcissist to the T.
And you hear his name so much when you like sort of a pinnacle of these serial killers. And I think he's probably one of the first people to which that label was applied. But he was 42 when he was killed, having committed the last of his crimes at 31. Why are we so into this? We always say you remember the names of the serial killers far more than we do the victims, and the victims are the ones that should be memorialized, obviously. But what is the fascination? Just human nature?
It's a seduction, and that seduction is, you know, there's this the light and the dark side kind of thing. And it's not that people want to go to the dark side, but they want to know about it. You know, we want to know, could my neighbor be this person? Could my neighbor be the person that's going to be the next killer, or is my neighbor going to be the next victim? And you don't know that until you start studying the killers. And part of the problem with that is your body reacts to it like you're watching the 9 o'clock news. So you get through this whole cycle. And of course, they did some good editing in this video and in the series altogether. And it kind of keep you on edge. And, you know, I've talked to several people, and some of the people say the first couple episodes, it was a little disjointed. They would jump from one time frame to another in different such situations. But by the time they get to third or maybe the second to the last one, everybody was just fixated on it, because now that's when all the meat started coming out and we started hearing the real stories, and it just sucks us in. It's like that car accident. We have to slow down and look to see if there's a body.
Like that 24-hour news cycle when something major is going on and we just stop everything to sort of watch, I guess.
Absolutely. And, you know, part of it is, hey, I'm so lucky that isn't me, or I didn't do that, or, man, I know my cousin is a little weird. Maybe he's a killer. So you start watching and trying to pick up on all these traits. It's pretty silly, but it is very inducing and very seductive. We just get drawn to it like flies to oil.
Have you discussed your cousin with anyone, Dr. Huber?
Of course I have, definitely. We need to talk about yours, though, I think.
I have a very interesting family. They are the ones that, for viewers of the show, the scary Santas that go up on Facebook and all these crazy still shots we showed of, you know, you get these vintage shots of what Santas used to look like, and Easter bunnies, too, and they used to be quite scary. Check out your mom's baby doll pictures from the past. But anyway, my cousins are good with spreading the love on that. Okay, so anyway, off back to the topic. it's really having a moment. It's a whole genre. We had about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, the whole Making of a Murderer, the story of Stephen Avery. And that was interesting, too, because it had such an amazing component of someone who might have been put in jail for the wrong reasons. He was thrown in for a rape that he didn't commit, and I think after 18 years, he was released. Then he got busted for murdering someone, and he's still in prison. So is it just because they're such amazing, like, could it happen to me? And also, by the way, maybe John Huber's cousin is a serial killer, too. What should we watch out for?
Well, you know, in the case Making of a Murderer, I mean, that's essentially what happened. This person was not a criminal, and he got thrown in there, and he got an education inside, you know, a cell block. And when he came out, that's the life he knew, and that's what he had studied, essentially. So it's unfortunate, and that does make us think, could it be me? Could I be the next? You know, what if I get a speeding ticket and somehow I end up in a lineup and I look like somebody who killed somebody and now I'm being incarcerated? It is not a peaceful thought. It's pretty scary, actually.
It's frightening. It's the best justice system in the world, but it's still got its flaws for sure. Coming up with Dr. Huber, how does true crime affect our well-being if we OD on it? And when it's time to tune out. He's with me.
Well, you need to start. Oh,
we're going to come back and talk about that. But yeah, we got a hard break. But it's mainstreammentalhealth.org for everybody who wants to check in on that. And we're back after this with the doc.
Theodore Bundy has escaped.
Suspected of dozens of sex killings in Washington State, Idaho, Utah, and Colorado.
I think things are going to work out. That's about all I can say.
Bundy is acting as his own lawyer.
What is unusual to see is that many of the onlookers are women.
Are you a little scared when you look at him?
He just doesn't look like the type to kill somebody.
Serial killer Theodore Bundy has escaped once again.
One of the FBI's most wanted men.
He was charming, good-looking, smart. Are you sure you have the right guy?
Aside from that, he's a great guy, right? Talking to Dr. John Huber about the Ted Bundy tapes, a new offering from Netflix that really feeds into the this yearning that so many true crime addicts have for these things. You know, Doc, you have people addicted to Dateline, and it trends all the time. And you've got, when Making a Murderer first came out a couple years ago, it was trending like crazy. People were home over the holidays, and it just hit a nerve. Because as we talked about with Stephen Avery, did he or didn't he, and which time, right?
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
So with the Ted Bundy thing, why did they make this docuseries now? Was it just they got a hold of these tapes and decided, let's do a little show?
Well, I think so. I mean, it's such an enticing topic. And, you know, we see today we've had these series of mass killers and mass shootings and things like that. And it's interesting that the first ones, you know, were the Ted Bundys, you know, the Green River Killer, you know, that made national headlines, Son of Sam. And it is so perverse. It's such a heinous act. We just have to sit down and try to analyze it, try to make sense of it as an individual, a human being. So we want to see all this information. And they pulled together these great interviews. This collection of audio tapes in his own voice. You hear him talk about his escape, how he, for example, when he was jumping out, you know, practicing jumping because he knew he was planning on jumping out a window. It turned out he jumped out a 25-foot ledge out of a window. And, you know, he practiced, so he hit the ground running, and it was not a problem for him. And, you know, man, the thought that goes into that when you're in such a desperate situation as an individual. Now, at the same time, it's so almost hypocritical. He was so concerned about being locked up and his rights being taken away, but those individuals that he harmed, he could care less about. In fact, he enjoyed hurting them, and he enjoyed watching them suffer. And some video that's not in the show, I've seen him talking about the pleasure he got from watching the life, that spark, disappear from the victim's eyes while he held their heads. And it's very disturbing, and we want to see that. And I'm kind of glad they didn't show some of the really extreme stuff and stream comments that I've seen that he's made, because it is disturbing, and I don't want people going to bed at night having really bad nightmares about this kind of stuff. But the reality of it is we all worry about monsters. The truth is all the monsters that are out there walk around on two legs just like you and I do.
You have to wonder sometimes, too, what goes on. Well, you and I could get into the whole nature versus nurture thing, which you know I love. And when did that switch flip that made him such a sociopathic narcissist? Like, how does that happen? Because he said in the trailer, or someone quoted him as saying, you have this yearning and you think with the next one you'll be satiated, but you're not. And it makes you wonder, we all have these vices in us, and do we look at it and say, you know, if people knew how bad I was, but am I that bad? I mean, do we try to calibrate and figure out, you know, oh, I'm okay, I'm not Bundy, I'm cool.
That is true. And it's interesting you talk about that feeling, that emptiness that he was trying to fulfill, because Jeffrey Dahmer had the same thoughts. And, you know, he explained how he would get that feeling of completeness when he was intimate with somebody, in particular men, and he was trying to find a way to save that, and he ended up ingesting body parts trying to get that feeling. And it is pretty disturbing to think about that. I think one of the most amazing things about this, and almost ironic, is Ted Bundy got caught for a traffic accident. And the very first person Jeffrey Dahmer killed, he had cut up in a plastic bag in his back seat, and he had a taillight out and got pulled over and talked the police officer out of doing anything. And of course, the officer didn't know the bag was full of body parts, but you know, he was that close to being caught after the very first body.
It's a bad day for that officer. Can you tell us anything that'll sort of really make us think, okay, this is when we've had too much, or here's what it does to us physiologically when we view these or view them too much and for too long?
Well, what you need to watch out for is, you know, if everybody you see starts, hey, he's a serial killer, watch out for that person. If you start becoming super paranoid, super jaded about life, oh, you know, somebody tells you something you don't like, they must be a serial killer, or I wonder who they've killed or where the bodies are hidden. You know, you start thinking like that, you're invested too much. You need to take a break, because the reality of it is we have 330 million people in this country, billions of people worldwide, yet we only have a handful of these people. It's very few, very far between. And, you know, one practitioner, a medical doctor, we were talking about this last week, and he goes, you know, think of what must be going on genetically, the genetic abnormality that happens to cause this defunction behavior. And with the millions and billions of people out there, and yet so few have that, it's pretty overwhelming and amazing at the same time to think about.
Well, the show is the Ted Bundy Tapes on Netflix, and Dr. Huber is with Mainstream Mental Health. He's the chairman. It's a nonprofit. If you want to go there and support it, I'm sure he'd be glad to have you. He does all this for free along with his regular day jobs. And by the way, you can go there and click around and find his podcast, upcoming events, all kinds of articles, things that could help you or loved ones. So it's a pretty useful tool, right, Doc?
I think so, but of course I'm biased. So.
And you've got about a minute, so let's talk about what you've got coming up on your podcast and how we can find those. Do you do it weekly or a couple of weeks?
We do. Actually, we're doing two of them now weekly. Another guest who's come on your show, Kristen, she and I do one. She's not a professional, but she talks about mental health and her experience with mental health. So we sit down and we have a host who throws questions, things that are going on topically. And we do this every Friday morning. It's usually out by Friday evening, if not Monday morning early. And you get two different perspectives. Somebody who's experienced getting treatment and being treated by mental health professionals, and then a mental health professional who throws out his perspective, my perspective. I don't like talking in a third party, because that would Mr. Bundy did that. Let's see.
Third person, yeah. What does Dr. Huber think of Dr. Huber?
Exactly.
All right, Doc, we appreciate it as always. We'll see you next time, okay?
Awesome. Thank you so much, and have an amazing week.
You too, sir. Speaking of Netflix, a new superheroes offering next.
Too much cholesterol in the blood causes plaque buildup in the arteries. Fiber has been scientifically proven to lower cholesterol. Created by Dr. J. Robert Cade, the inventor of Gatorade, Cholesterade promotes probiotic function, supports digestive health, contains all natural flavors, and is gluten-free. In the original case study, participants saw a reduction in bad cholesterol by more than 20%. Cholesterade is the ultimate all-natural digestive aid.
America Trends here on the U2 America TV network and on Biz Talk Radio. Thank you for being with us for the hour. I'm your host, Amy Fuller, and our guest tonight, Daniel Buttafuoco. We so appreciate him coming on and talking about his book called Consider the Evidence. And you can find it at bookstores everywhere, Amazon, and also here on his website, ConsiderTheEvidenceBook.com. He goes in with a detective's, a lawyer's perspective and investigates the New Testament and tells you why it matters, why it's right, just some very interesting things. So you want to check that out, check out his website, and we'll be having him back soon to talk with us. Also had our America Trends friend, Dr. John Huber of Mainstream Mental Health, talking about trying to stay mentally healthy as we're watching this whole genre about serial killers and the new Ted Bundy tapes docuseries on Netflix and why we get so obsessed with true crime and things like that. You know what? Speaking of Netflix, there's a big new offering out on it's a superheroes thing. It's a superheroes family called the Umbrella Academy, a super dysfunctional family of superheroes who has 8 days to get it together and save the world. Debuts February 15th. Here's some of the Umbrella Academy as we say goodbye for now.
In October 1989, 43 women around the world gave birth. None of these women had been pregnant when the day first began.
How much do you want for it?
I have adopted 6 children. Gifted with abilities far beyond the ordinary. I give you the Umbrella Academy.
Does anyone wish to speak?
It was a monster.
Everything about our family is insane. It always has.
Is that my skirt?
Oh, yeah, this. It's very breathy on the bits.
Nice to see nothing's changed. I jumped forward and got stuck in the future. Do you know what I found? Absolutely nothing.
When's it supposed to happen?
In 8 days.
Oh, shit.
There's someone out there who's trying to stop me from preventing the apocalypse.
We need the full force of the Academy.
Bingo.
Yay, sisters.
Yay, sisters.
Get up. We're going.
Where?
Save the world.
Oh, is that all?